Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. My Olympian mission is to promote lifelong personal development, human empowerment, out-of-the-box thinking, creative self-expression, and a dedication of one's unique talents to community service. All of my labors in this lifetime celebrate the hero's journey in myth, legend, spirituality, popular culture, and in daily life. I firmly believe that the human spirit is essentially heroic and always seeking ways to express its innate nobility and greatness, and that a life fully lived, dedicated to actualizing the highest we can conceive, is the noblest expression of human existence. Tonight, on Age of Heroes, the Elysium Project, I am proud to announce the return of David Parker, who, among other awesome things, wrote the book, The More You Do, The Better You Feel. Greetings and welcome, David. Welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's nice to be back.
I'm glad you're here. It's been quite a while since we connected.
It's wonderful to be back, and hello to all your listeners.
Now, last time we spoke, you had started a new career. Do you want to start there, or would you like to backtrack a bit to the road that brought you there?
Well, the road that brought me there was actually, I've unfortunately been burdened with the with major depressive disorder. And while going through an exercise, self-directed exercise, and trying to figure out why I felt so low and bleak, I started to realize that my lifetime habit of procrastinating was making me utterly miserable. And so I set about to find a way to overcome that impediment to action, and I came up with a method. I call it the Jot Method. I really came up with it just for myself. I had no intention of writing a book. I just needed to analyze how my brain worked. Why was I so against personal responsibility? And what I found was every time I attempted to take action, I would talk myself out of it, usually by saying the same things to myself. I would say, oh, it's too boring, or it's too complicated, or I'd rather be doing something else, or just plain old, oh, not now. And what I came up with was what I call the JOT method, which means just one task. The acronym JOT means just one task. And I taught myself to focus on just one task, complete it, and then write down on a sheet of paper, which I call the jot list, my second task, and do that. And so by focusing on one task at a time, I actually got a lot more done than I would normally. Well, normally I'd get nothing done because I would just be in that constant cycle of just like a dog chasing his tail. I would always be saying to myself, like, oh, I can't deal with it. It's too boring. It's too complicated. Or, again, I just don't feel like it. And, you know, a lot of procrastinators often say, I'll do it when I feel like it. The problem is I never feel like doing it,
yeah.
So I never deal with it. And so I came up with the JOT method, and it just worked. It worked, like, from day one. And then eventually I just came to a realization that I really had something. And as a person who read a lot of self-help books from my early 20s on, I said to myself, you know, this could really help people. And I didn't have the name, the JOT method, for it. It was just a kind of a writing exercise, but I came up with that name just to make it a little easier for people to understand. And so I came out with, I wound up writing a book. The first half of it is my struggle with depression and procrastination, and the second half is into action. And so the full title of the book, by the way, is The More You Do, The Better You Feel, How to Overcome Procrastination and Live a Happier Life. And going forward, and the book has been out for about 5 years right now. It does respectfully well on Amazon, and it's available as a paperback and as an ebook on Amazon. Just recently, I kind of went the next step forward, taking a course to become what's known as a peer support specialist or peer counselor, something I believe you have some experience with. And
yeah.
I just passed the course just a few days ago, actually. I got my kind of graduation letter by email, and I'll be going for a job as a peer specialist to help people who need a little encouragement and a little bit of guidance from somebody who's not only can talk the talk, but someone who's walked the walk like myself.
That is incredibly awesome. I remember when the whole peer counseling field started. Most of my career has been in human services, mental health, and workforce development. I remember when the movement first started, what a powerful thing it was for the folks entering it, empowered to help people who are struggling with things that they had once struggled with themselves or might still be struggling with. And also, it was very empowering to the person getting help, because they saw that it is possible to move past where you're currently stuck. And
right.
Your book is an awesome book. I remember I read it when we first connected, and it seems like such a simple thing, but that's where its brilliance and its power lie. It is a simple thing, so it's easy to do. You just have to do it, and that's pretty much the only step that you need to take, and then keep doing it. And it's an excellent way to keep track of time and to structure time and to use time to your advantage.
Yeah, and you know, one of the big problems that people face with procrastination is not just getting started, but it's the relationship between procrastination and mental depression. Because one of the hallmark signs of depression is lack of energy. And when a person procrastinates greatly or habitually, and then they get depressed over their, let's say, their messy home or messy apartment, for example, they may then start to feel depressed over their living environment. Well, if you really do suffer with mental depression and you lose your energy, as some people do, that gives you almost the perfect excuse to procrastinate more. And then as the mail comes in and as you bring things into your home and you don't tidy up or you don't pay your bills, you procrastinate more and more. And so what happens? Well, your depression gets worse and worse. I should mention, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist or, you know, I'm just someone who has gone through severe depression. And I found that one of the ways that I deal with depression is by trying to keep my living environment clean and orderly as much as possible. There's other things that I do as well, which include light exercise and keeping track of my bank account down to the penny and not letting it, you know, there was once a time when I would wait 9 months until I balanced my checkbook, and of course it wound up taking several hours to do, and I'd be, you know, cursing myself, why is it so difficult? And of course it was difficult because I'd wait nine or ten months to deal with it, and so it was a tremendously difficult task. But if you know, like there's an expression, how do you eat an elephant? Well, one bite at a time. And so by just keeping my home clean and trying to stay on top of things and I pay my bills. Generally speaking, I pay my electric and my credit card bill the night that they come in the mail. If I just can't for some reason, if something else is a priority, that's okay. I try not to be a perfectionist. I just try to get it done the next day. And, you know, it just, you know, my best friend, you might say, is my filing cabinet. You know, my filing cabinet makes my life a lot more orderly than if I didn't have it. And I remember when I didn't have a filing cabinet. I can't believe I lived that way. So I'm just throwing out some tips. And by the way, I believe you're going to allow people, if I'm right, to call in. And if that is the case and people call in, I'd be happy to answer any questions on procrastination
Unless you've asked people to call in, I didn't set it up for that today. Next time you're on, we'll set that up.
Oh, okay.
I believe maybe with Paul Lefkowitz that was arranged. And by the way, thank you very much for being on the list to address our Rotary. Our Rotary is very active in our community, and they're very concerned with people's health. I spoke to Paul, and he was phenomenally impressed after his conversation with you. So I know that he's looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to it, and the Rotarians are looking forward to it.
Well, I appreciate that. I'll speak anywhere if anybody has any need for a speaker, either live or on Zoom or like in person when I say live. If anybody wants to contact me, by the way, for any, if you have any questions on procrastination and you can't call in, that's okay. You can always shoot me an email. I'm happy to help. My email address is info, that's I-N-F-O, at davidparkerauthor.com. That's info, I-N-F-O, at davidparkerauthor, that's A-U-T-H-O-R.com. So please feel free to write in with any question, or if you need a speaker and you're interested in having me, I'd be I do weddings, bar mitzvahs, and no, I don't. But you know, we're working on that though.
I've done all sorts of either as a minister, I've officiated over events, or through one of my speaking gigs, or for a while I was doing activities with people, mythological activities from kids to seniors. So I did that route for a while. It was a lot of fun.
That's great. Terrific.
Now, how is your path to becoming a peer counselor coming along?
Well, I just, you know, I was going to, you know, the most prestigious or well-known school in peer support happens to be in New York City, and I live in Brooklyn. And it's a school that's named after one of the founders of the movement, the peer support movement, whose name, he was a street musician. His real name was Howard Geld, but because he played the harmonica, he was known as Howie the Harp.
Howie the Harp, yeah.
And so the school was named the Howie the Harp Peer Support Training Institute. It's located in Harlem, and I was going to classes from the last week in January of this year, of what's left of this terrific year of 2020, which we have one day left of, thank goodness. And I think everybody, this is the one year everybody is waiting for this year to end. Hopefully 2021 will be a lot better. But I started classes in the last week of January of this year, and we made it up until, I believe it was Friday, March 13th, which was the day we were told, don't come to class on Monday, and we switched to Zoom and another platform. And we, in order to finish up our classes, we had to take not only the core tests in peer support, but several of the electives, about 9 electives to prove our mettle. And so it took me 2.5 months to go through, I believe it was 13 core exams and 9 electives. So it came out to a total of 22. And I passed them. It's the most work I've done in years. And I will be looking for a position as a peer specialist to help people.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That is phenomenal, and I know you'll enjoy it, and I know you'll get a lot of satisfaction from it, because you will be helping people in a very real way, like you do with your book.
Well, you know, that's what I'd like to do, and well, we'll see what happens. You know, it's a long road, and we'll have to see what happens. But I would like to help people, and you know, help people with their issues. I think unfortunately it's a little late for me to become a social worker. I think I'd make a good social worker, but or a psychologist.
Too.
But thank you.
I think you would as well. It's never too late.
So,
there's always time.
Well, yeah, there is, but you know, there's only so many hours in a day, so this is a good way of helping people. Yep.
there used to be. I haven't been involved in the field in any major way for a while. But there used to be a lot of opportunities with nonprofit organizations in their activities departments for people who were peer
right.
counselors. So there
right.
always seemed to be, and people who had peer counseling, you know, they went through the educational process, they were given preference over people who hold other degrees, because again, they understood in a very personal and real way what was going on with the people coming to get help. So I'm hoping that that's still the case today.
Right. Very good. Yeah. Yeah. I think that it's a growing movement, and you know, for people who want a quick entry into the mental health field to work as a paraprofessional, working as a peer support specialist is a good way of helping people. And the Howie DeHarp School is not the only one in the nation, not by far. So the peer support movement was founded about 20 years ago, and I believe there are likely schools in every state in the country. So if people are interested, they should definitely look into that.
So that is fantastic. And I believe that you had shared in one of our conversations that you were thinking about writing a sequel to your book.
Well, you know, I would like to write a book on overcoming pessimism, because that is another one of my core issues, like procrastination. Pessimism is a great personal foe, and it's a foe to a lot of people.
Yes.
The only thing is, and I don't want to sound funny, but in all seriousness, I have not overcome my pessimistic nature. I can't write a book about something that I really haven't, you know, conquered, not in a self-help sense. I mean, before COVID, I'd make one or two health fairs a month. Being here in New York City, there's a whole bunch of them. Sometimes I'd even make one or two of them in a week. I'd make health fairs, and a lot of people, when they'd see my book about overcoming procrastination, they would chuckle. They would
really?
Kind of give it a look like, oh yeah. In fact, what I got many times, at health fairs and at health expos, people would look at my book and smile and say, I was going to buy your book, but I put it off. And it's funny how every one of those people who says it thinks they're the first who ever said it, but that's okay. If that's my biggest burden as a self-help author, I can live with that. But it's just funny how many people, a lot of people look at procrastination like, well, you know, first of all, there are people who don't procrastinate at all. They don't understand people who procrastinate. Many times they have intimate relationships with people who are procrastinators, or wind up marrying them, and or people are in the workplace and have a coworker or a colleague who's a procrastinator, and they just don't understand why does this person procrastinate? Why do it? You know, that's the way things are with some people. Other people just look at procrastination as, yeah, we all do it, but it's a mild annoyance. But for hardcore habitual procrastinators like myself, it's a very, very difficult habit to overcome, and having overcome it to a major degree, that's what prompted me to write my book, because I felt so much better. Again, that's why my book is titled "The More You Do, the Better You Feel: How to Overcome Procrastination and Live a Happier Life," which again is available on Amazon. It's also available at my website, which is davidparkerauthor.com. But for some people, procrastination is a real dilly of a problem. And, I procrastinate occasionally on, you know, something. I mean, there's only so many hours in a day, you know, and we have a lot going on. We have a lot of distractions, you know. I try to limit my television viewing, and I try to, you know, try to create a list of things that I want to accomplish every day. And, you know, another part of being a procrastinator and being a pessimist is being a perfectionist. And, you know, I have to be careful with that, because that will plunge me into depression. So I have to say, look, you know, if I had, you know, eight priority things that I needed to do today, and I only got four of them done because some took longer than I expected, or, you know, that's life sometimes. I have to give myself leeway and say, well, I did the best I could under the circumstances. I don't have a staff. I don't have a secretary. It's just me and the keyboard and the telephone, and basically it, you know. So I try to do as much as I can, but, you know, we have to eat and sleep and rest up, you know. So you know, we each try to do the best that we can, especially in these days of the COVID virus. I mean, it's really exasperating. Just remembering to bring a mask, you know, to wear a mask when I step out the door is an achievement. I think a lot of people can identify with that.
Wow.
And you?
I have my own mental process. I'm attention deficit.
Right.
Ordered, they call it. And
right.
I remember when I first read Tom Hartman's books, they were a revelation, because for the first time I got to see like a mirror of my brain. So I don't, my mind scans huge areas. And unless something's
right.
moving, it doesn't really focus on those things. So I need to learn a discipline to get through each day. Otherwise, things that aren't moving, I won't get my attention until they become
right.
a crisis of some sort. And also, my attention switches. So Tom Hartman described this as being like a hunter's mind. So if you're chasing after a rabbit for dinner and a deer crosses your path, you'll leave the rabbit to get the deer, and that it makes sense from a survival point of view. But to a lot of people, it looks like you're jumping from topic to topic. So
right.
I learned how to manage that, and it has served me. It doesn't serve me 100% of the time. I found that nothing will serve 100% of the time. But that helped me navigate through a great deal of my life and use my brain to its optimal advantage. So
that's good.
I like reading self-help books the same way I like reading exercise books, because I'm always playing with my psyche, and I'm always playing with my routines to try to make them better. So I found
that's
for meditation. I meditate twice a day now, religiously. but not religiously. My meditations aren't religious per se. They're more breathing and being centered and so forth. And I found that doing that twice a day for 10, 15 minutes keeps me calm throughout most of the day, through most of the things that happen in the day. So I've become a lot less reactive just by doing that and remaining mindful. So I'm continuously looking for ways to improve. Not that I feel unhappy with how I am or that I have to be more perfect than I currently am, because I'm fine with myself the way I am. It's just that I have a zest for life and for trying to explore my own horizons and my own potential, because I discovered very early that we're more than our programming. So we've been programmed with a certain identity. We've been programmed with layers of roles and so forth. And I found that there's more to us than that. So I do dream work every night in addition to meditating. I've played with like astral projection and all sorts of things. So this is part of my life experience. So it's not that I'll be a more perfect person or, necessarily a better person, but while I'm alive, I intend to live. So that's kind of like where I am with things.
Well, that's commendable, because life is it's not a destination; it's a journey.
And, it is.
That's exactly what it sounds like what you're doing right now is you're involved in a evolution process. You're trying to change for the better and not pressure yourself or typecast yourself. You're just on a search for information and seeing what works for you, and you take what works and you disregard the rest.
Pretty much, and it's an adventure that never ends. And I guess if there is any final accounting at the end of days, it's like I gave it my best shot. I was the best person I was capable of being at any particular point in time, and I gave things my all, and sometimes it didn't measure up or sometimes it wasn't enough, but looking back, I can sincerely say that who I was in the moment and what I knew, and that I gave it the best that I had.
So Hercules, tell me and tell the rest of the audience, if you don't mind if I play interviewer for a second.
No,
go ahead. Do you procrastinate? Do you procrastinate on anything, or how do you deal with? Do you ever find yourself slipping into that foe of personal productivity? Do you
everybody
procrastinate?
Does. Everybody does, and I procrastinate.
How do you? How do you procrastinate? What do you find that you tend to procrastinate about?
These days, not as much as when I was younger. When I was younger, I could identify with a lot of what you were saying with, leaving things and finding excuses. Now mm-hmm. I've learned how to make bright pictures in my mind. So the pictures
right.
in my mind pull me. So I do all the steps that I need to accomplish the bright picture, knowing that the bright picture will never really like measure up to what the bright picture in my head was. So that disappointment's gone too. I learned that the grass is not greener on the other side of the fence or on the other side of the forest. But so now if I want to go to the other side of the forest, it's because I want to go to the other side of the forest. But I use the light to draw me. So for instance, with this podcast. I had podcasts before in Pennsylvania, and it took some time to start the podcast again for a variety of reasons, some of which were my own procrastination or my own lack of focus. But once
right.
I started on the path and did my first podcast, Then it became something. Now we're doing a podcast a day. Some days we're doing two podcasts on two different stations, and I'm a guest on other people's podcasts as well. Now the next step is video, so it's with Zoom and Skype and things like that. So that's taken a long time to get off the ground because my learning curve in the beginning is kind of steep. But I'm in the process. So I've been doing a lot of Zoom meetings as a guest, and I've been doing Skype meetings as a guest. So now it's basically a matter of in January attempting to do one and then just putting it up, whatever happens. Once I've done it a few times, though, and I become comfortable with the initial steps, then it's just experimentation, and I'm fine with that. These podcasts, too, things go wrong at an alarming rate, and it doesn't faze me anymore. But in the beginning, it was quite disconcerting when the program would disconnect me or disconnect my guest, or something would happen to the sound, or you know, there'd be weird static. But as you progress on the journey, I know that you figure out what to do, and it becomes easier as you go forward. So,
and I think a lot of what you're saying addresses perfectionism. Because what you're saying is that when you would have things like static or bad phone lines or something, it would really cause a disruption. And
right.
You know, in my book, one of the things that I say is for a perfectionist, good enough is great. That's one of the things that I truly believe. You know, because perfectionism will definitely cause a person to procrastinate. And if I could just tell your listeners for a second, just for anybody who tuned in late, you know, we are talking about procrastination, and because we can't take telephone calls, if anybody has any questions on procrastination and how it relates to depression or just to life in general, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them by email. Just write to me at info at David Parker Author, and you know, I'd be more than happy. Again, that the email address is info at David Parker Author, AUTHOR.com, and I'd be happy, more than happy to see if I could be of any assistance to anyone who's tuning in to this podcast. So please feel free to write to me. So we have a lot in common, Hercules, because we're both, you know, on that journey of self-improvement.
Right, right. And I found, too, that once you – the most difficult part for me is navigating the first few steps. But once I've done that, I'm fine, you know, because I've learned all the things you learn on these types of journeys. Like, for instance, in the past couple of years, I've been published in over a dozen anthologies, paranormal anthologies.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that was recommended to me by several people. And, you know, now I have an author page on Amazon and on Goodreads with, you know, all these books on it. And I didn't write the whole book, but I contributed chapters to all these books. So now I'm a published author, which I wasn't a couple of years ago. And also all those articles I wrote for e-zines, you know, piled up. So now I have a respectable amount of articles that people can read online on things that I'm not producing myself. So for me, the hardest part is just figuring out how to start. And that's where all the slowness comes in. Once I've...
Well, you know, there's a famous expression that goes, or saying that goes, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with but a single step.
Yes.
And that may sound funny, but it's actually a very deep comment on life, because how many times in life do you... you know, hate a task, you don't want to deal with tasks, like, you know, tax time is coming up. And, you know, people say, oh, my God, I've got to get all the receipts out and, you know, calculate them and put them and tally them up. But then when you start doing it, once you've like, finished the receipts, you go, like, is that it? There's
yeah.
no more? You almost feel like, come on, like, bring them on. I built up a head of steam here. Let's move this train down the track, you know, and then again, we don't want to switch tasks, even though in regards to taxes, we may have to do tallies of other categories besides receipts. We may have tally revenue or tally other expenses. And then every time, I know for myself, every time I finish one category, I go like, darn, is that all there is? Now I have to, but then switching my attention to the next thing, which is very similar to, you know, the previous thing, is just, I don't want to start something new, even though it's just a facet, so, you know, of the same thing. This is, again, you know, the procrastinating mind. It's just, you know, it's just human nature. That's who we're,
yeah.
We're not perfect, and that's how we are sometimes, you know, but we have to just find a mechanism. That's, again, why I came up with my anti-procrastination method called the JOT method, meaning just one task.
And in its simplicity, like I said before, it's brilliant. And most solutions in life are, like the meditation. You know, it doesn't sound like a really difficult thing to do, and it isn't. Once you've disciplined yourself to do it, you've made it a habit. It's just basically breathing and being aware of your breath. And sometimes you could say a word if you want, or a phrase, or, you know, whatever. But you don't have to do that either. You can just focus on your breathing. And you don't judge your breathing. You know, sometimes it's fast, sometimes it's slow, sometimes it's shallow, sometimes it's deep. Just pay attention to your breathing, and you'll get past the beta brainwaves into the alpha, you know, more relaxed brainwaves. And once you know how to find that, it becomes really easy. You could sometimes bring yourself there on a count of five, because you know how to locate that brainwave pattern. But until you get to that point, it takes a while, and all that's really required of you is you just don't stop doing it, you know. And just like we have bad habits, we can develop good habits too. It's just a matter of repetition. And the more you do something, and the more consistently you do it, the more likely you are to do it automatically.
That's right. That's absolutely true. That's right. Yeah, I think a lot of people can relate to that, you know. And there are still a lot of people who think that, you know, meditation is something that only gurus and New Age people practice. But no, a lot of people practice meditation, and there's all kinds of meditation, by the way. There's different types. There's guided meditation. There's a whole host of things that are available in that realm.
And just as you found a new career, I've been contemplating a new career because of feedback that I've been getting consistently. I've been doing guided visualizations as part of my lectures, and people really like them. And now with the COVID, I'm not doing any live lectures. I did one last month, but I used to do them fairly often. The thing people have been telling me the most is how much they miss those guided visualizations. So in a conversation I had with someone, they told me that they did that for a living as a hypnotherapist. So I started looking into that, you know, because I love doing that. I love taking people on these visual adventures, and they always seem to feel good afterwards. So this might be something that I can in my 60s start doing, and exploring a whole new area of life that I didn't really explore before. And I've always been good at that. I've always used it throughout my entire career, both therapeutically and non, but I didn't relate it to hypnotherapy.
Well, that sounds great. Well, life is a learning adventure, isn't it? So it's another opportunity to learn, and it's an opportunity to serve and to help people as well.
Very, very true. And so you are also a speaker. In fact, I met you at a speaking event. I met you at a health fair.
That's right, the New Life Expo in the city.
Yes, I'm glad I attended that day because I really value our interactions.
I do too. Thank you.
So do you have, beyond your current journey, do you have like a bright picture that you're moving towards?
Well, a bright picture? I don't know. I honestly, I kind of live one day at a time. Of course, I have different things. I may have a trip to Europe coming up in a couple of months, and that sounds
awesome.
Exciting. It just really depends on the virus and how things work their way around, but hopefully I'll go to Europe. I was in London in 2019. I'm glad I was able to get in a trip to London. I used to live in London, and so it was nice to come back. It was actually the first time I went back to London in 12 years, and enjoyed some of my favorite foods over there and saw some old familiar sights. But it'd be nice to take a trip in a couple of months if things work out. But I think that, looking towards becoming a peer specialist is probably the next thing on the agenda, you know, and we'll see how that goes, you know.
Well, we'll definitely be following your journey here on the show and learning all the things that you have to teach us on the process.
Well, yeah, if anytime you want to have me back, if you'd like to, that would be wonderful. And if we do that, maybe next time we could take telephone calls from the listeners.
We can set that up next time and make it part of what we're doing.
That would be great. That would be great. Yeah.
Now,
so do you have a school in mind where you're going to study hypnotherapy?
I'm researching that right now, and I'm talking to people who've done hypnotherapy. Basically at this point, I'm at the absorbing it all stage. I'm learning, and I'm going to look into that once the pandemic has passed and I'm out there again. I'm going to look into it in greater detail and, maybe sit in on some hypnotherapy sessions or have people do hypnotherapy with me or, you know.
You know, I know an old joke that's kind of goes, two hypnotherapists meet each other in the street, and one says to the other, "You're doing great. How am I doing?" It's the kind of joke you gotta think about it for a second, but it's kind of cool.
Well, one of the things I like about it, and I'm reading a lot about like hypnosis and hypnotherapy and stuff like that, is it reinforces the effect of words. So,
yes.
In a dark way, advertisers and people who don't have our best interests at heart, you know, have learned a lot of these techniques and they use them.
Definitely.
So words can
power
be
of suggestion.
Yes, can be used to harm as well as to heal. So one of the things I'm learning, and it's important to me as I learn this, you know, right now we're flooded with information. And the information is directed, and it's directed by people who are experts at manipulation. And there's a lot of whistleblowing going on about, you know, the organizations involved in these types of activities and how they played into the elections and, you know, all this type of things. So I'm taking this as an opportunity to become aware of all the forces around me that are seeking to influence me and other people and trying to spot it so that I'm not affected by it as much, or, you know, I don't become a victim of it. So whether I decide to follow that path professionally or vocationally, the journey right now as I'm exploring those options is that this is a good thing to know regardless of what I choose to do with it, and it'll better help me navigate through life because I place a lot of stock on my free will and my autonomy. So the more I can do to vouchsafe that and to protect it, the better off I will be and the better off those I love will be.
That's right. Well, it sounds like you're really studying this and you're looking at everything, and you know, that's the way to go.
What would you say your greatest influences were, your positive influences on your personal path to self-discovery, to enlightenment? And I can call it that because you are shedding light on your inner self and you're sharing that light with others. And you're wanting to take what you've learned for yourself and help other people with it. What were your greatest influences?
Well, I think some self-help authors like Wayne Dyer, late Wayne Dyer was, and I'm just about to start reading again the book Feeling Good by Dr. David Burns. I think I've read that cover to cover three times, and I think I'd like to read that one again. That's a good book. So there's some authors. I can't remember the name of the author. There was this terrific book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway.
Yes.
That's a really... Do you know that book?
Yeah, I've read that maybe a dozen times. The most valuable piece of information that I've kept in my mind from that, and I don't remember who wrote it. It was a woman who wrote it, Barbara something maybe, but it was that the fear and excitement are the same feeling.
Yeah,
and that
That's
if
right.
you stick with the excitement. If you stick with the fear, it'll turn to excitement as you start to move forward. And also, she gave me a very useful way of thinking about our boundaries and our the area we consider comfortable with, our comfort zone, and how in order to move past your current comfort zone, you know, you're going to be uncomfortable for a while. So not to run away from the discomfort, but to embrace it and to realize that it's a good thing. So that was one of my favorite books as well as I walk my path.
That's interesting. Very good. Yeah. Yeah, it was a very good book. Yeah, I've read many, many self-help books over the years, and some of them have a. I was just talking to someone earlier tonight on the telephone who mentioned Dale Carnegie's classic book, "How to Win Friends and Influence
yeah.
People," and that's still a very good book. It's kind of a funny title, but it's because we don't really win friends, do we? But you know, like in the lottery sense, but we kind of select our friends and the path that we wish to go down in life. Needless to say, that is a very good book, and people might want to look into that. It's a terrific book to read, and a lot of us have a lot of spare time on our hands these days, so it's good to expand your mind and learn more new things, I think.
I think so too. Feel the Fear and Do It Anyways by Susan Jeffers. I was wrong about it. Wasn't
That's
Barbara.
Right. I actually saw her in London. I saw her give a talk
Did
at
you?
A church, and
awesome.
Yeah, I was quite lucky to. I think I had a chat with her husband. I didn't get a chance to talk to her, but I spoke to her spouse, and sadly, she passed away a couple of years ago. But she was very nice, very nice to listen to.
Yeah, her book was a very important. I found that like at a perfect time in my life. I was feeling very stuck also, and I was. In retrospect, it might have been procrastination. You know, I was putting off doing things. But then with her model and some of the things that she pointed out in the book, I was able to get past those obstacles fairly quickly. And then I actually used some of the things I learned in the book and expanded them. And when I was at the period of my life when I was working in like homeless shelters and things like that, I credited her book, and that was the one you recommended reading to people who wanted to take it further. But the things she had about comfort zones, I really, really expanded that greatly, and I would teach people simple techniques, you know, and I had like a story written, you know, that people could remember and, you know, to remind them what to do. And I would give them things to do that would bring them to the edge of their comfort zone. So that was a very important book for me.
Right. Very good. Very good. It's good to keep on this search and for knowledge and learning and expanding one's mind, and it's a good thing, I think, definitely. Yeah. What other books have you read?
Oh, I used to read a book a day. And I can't do that anymore because my eyes aren't what they used to be. But I used to read a book a day. So I've read many thousands of books. And generally the types of books that I keep handy are the ones that allow you to process life better.
Right.
And Feel the Very Fear and Do It Anyway, that's one of those books where it basically shows you what is happening in a very visual, easy to remember way, and then gives you techniques that if you find the technique that works for you, and not everything will work for you, and sometimes something will work for you for a little while and then won't work later on. So I tend to like those books the most, and there's a countless number of them. I'll give you like an example with my diet, which I'm sharing with people, my dietary lifestyle. I have type 2 diabetes, so that gives me several obstacles and that affect everything. And with type 2 diabetes, for a lot of people, if you find what works, it won't work forever. So I might find the perfect diet where I have energy, I feel full, I'm getting muscular, I feel fantastic. And then one day it won't work. So I've learned certain things that aren't in the books, you know, that work, that might be particular to my body, that my body's telling me that something's wrong, and then I'll have to start looking at things. But I continuously have to modify what I'm eating. So no
right.
book of information, I have tons of them, but no book on information will be correct for the entire journey. So the ones that I've held on to are the ones that point out how this is a process. And if you find yourself in a particular position, like with Feel the Fear, if you find yourself like, you find your world shrinking, then you're avoiding your comfort zone. And if you avoid your comfort zone starts choking you, and it becomes the discomfort comes to you rather than you avoiding it. So you have to go through that, discomfort part of your comfort zone to get to the other side. So those are the types of books I like. And some of them are like Dr. Seuss wrote a book called The Places You'll Go.
Oh, The Places You'll Go.
Yes, and that's a kid's book, but it's a perfect way of viewing life's journey. You know, sometimes things will happen, sometimes they won't. Sometimes you'll wind up in weird places no matter what you do. You know, like the worst thing you could do is wait for something to happen because you'll be waiting for a very long time. You know, so that's a type of book, and they don't have to be written for children. That's the type of book that I like and that I keep on my easily accessible bookshelf because it's something that reminds you of either a technique or a process or gives you a tool that will serve you as you navigate your own life.
Yes, definitely.
And since you asked me that question, next time I will dig out a few of those books and I can give you specific titles. But we're reaching the end of our conversation for today, and I'd like you to share with people again, how can they contact you, what types of things that you can offer?
Well, first of all, if anyone's looking for a good book on procrastination or the relationship between procrastination and depression, my book is titled The More You Do, The Better You Feel, How to Overcome Procrastination and Live a Happier Life. I'm David Parker. I'm the author of the book. If you'd like to be in touch with me or if you'd like to find out more about my book, you can visit my website, which is davidparkerauthor.com. That's davidparkerauthor, AUTHOR.com. And if you'd like to write to me about procrastination, if you have any questions or you have any concerns about maybe your own procrastination or the procrastination of a close relative or maybe your spouse or your child, you can write to me or someone in the workplace, colleague in the workplace, you can always write to me. My email address is info@davidparkerauthor.com. That's info@davidparkerauthor.com. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I also have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/davidparkerauthor. So keeping it all in the same theme. And by the way, we're coming up on New Year's very shortly, within a day. Mm-hmm. And of course, following New Year's always comes New Year's resolutions. And a lot of people have a hard time keeping their New Year's resolutions. They find it to be a very daunting task. If anybody has any questions about how to keep New Year's resolutions, shoot me an email. I'd be happy to talk with you about that and communicate and see if I can help you. And by the way, if you know somebody who has a hard time with procrastination, maybe you might want to consider giving a copy of my book as a gift. My book is available on Amazon.com, and it sells healthy on Amazon. It's got some wonderful, wonderful reviews. I'm surprised at some of the beautiful things that people have written about my book. I still don't consider myself an author, Hercules. I consider myself more of a survivor, hopefully a survivor of depression and procrastination. And my book isn't necessarily about it's not, a lot of books are out there about procrastination, and most of them are written to help busy executives be more productive. My book is kind of a book for people who have a very hard time getting started, and that's why I came up again with my procrastination fighting technique, which I call the JOT method, J-O-T, which means just one task. It really, really works if you work it. I'd like to say it's a simple technique for complicated people.
And we have 90 seconds. Thank you so very much, David. I put links to your website, to Amazon, to your Facebook page, and I listed your email address as well. Thanks
well,
again.
It's been wonderful being on your show. Thank you so much for having me, and you're a great host and a great person, and I'm glad we
Thank
met,
you.
And I'm glad
Thank
I
you.
Know you, and hopefully we'll see each other in person sometime. We'll give each other an elbow bump.
I'm sure we will. Thanks again, and thanks to everybody who's tuned in, whether you're listening live or plan to join us later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you a joyous, happy, and healthy new year. Take care, everybody. And
bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Hercules. Thanks for having me. Take care, everyone.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only